Hello, everybody. Thank you for coming. Nice to see you. Isn't it a nice conference we're at here today? It's not even raining yet. Good. So, first off, how many people here are either students or graduated within the last 12 months? 4 there, 5, 6, okay, so we got maybe half the audience. And the other half, what, you're all like decades experienced software consultants at way the other end of the scale, or what? What kind of other roles do we have? I know we have some PhDist people, so you don't have to answer, but like... excellent, so you're going to give me a hard time. It's exactly what I need. Fantastic, so also more expertise in the audience. So I'm going to be relying on the expertise here to augment what I'm saying, to redirect some questions to you perhaps at the end. Please contribute, right? Like when you see something which relates to your experience, which you can share with us, we'll certainly benefit from having those perspectives in our talk, okay? I'm gonna hold you to that. And so people who also are not students and I haven't spoken to, what kind of roles or where are you at in your careers or relationship with software? Sir here on the left who's just arrived. Security architect, excellent, excellent. Plenty to say to you about managers and why you shouldn't hate them. probably not going to convince you, but some food for thought at least, I hope. What else have we got here? Sir here in the hoodie, are you a student? Software developer, excellent. What kind of field? Software? Airline, very good. Okay, so also security related or front end or back end. Okay, good. Okay, so we've got a pretty good mix. And do we have any product managers, people who have the job title of product manager in the audience? Do we have any product owners in the audience? One. Okay, somebody who's almost a product owner. What's your job title, sir? Are you a one-man band or? For PR, like public relations? Okay, very good. Do you manage technology at all? Okay, sounds like a tough job. All right, so who am I? If you've been to OSCAL over the last 4 years at all, you already know who I am. I'm Sam, I work for PhDList. We have other PhDList staff in the audience, I'm very happy to say, also some longer time friends here. And we at PhDList, we are an open source company. We make a couple of different open source products, and we provide those as services. So we release back what we make to the community as an open source product, and we provide that as a service on a hosted platform. That's how we make our money and fund the whole process. So in order to deliver these products and services, we have to manage our products, and we're a pretty small team, so we have to be pretty efficient at how we manage those products, and it's pretty hard. So I'll be introducing why product management is a valid concept to those of you who are not already in the field, why it might be interesting to you who would be considering a career in it. How we at PhDist use it, and some open source tools which we can recommend for you to try if you're moving in that direction and you want to stick with your open source principles and not necessarily jump into one of the hundred of proprietary software as a service applications which are there to serve product managers. So first off, managers. Managers are people that tell other people what to do, usually. So if you're a student or you're starting your career, as I know half of you approximately are, then you might be thinking, why talk about managers, why care about managers at this point? Well, apart from anything else, these are the guys who are likely to be determining what you have to do with your day. These are the people whose priorities are going to be influencing your priorities. And apart from anything else, it's nice to be able to understand how they make their decisions and maybe make it a bit easier for you to predict what's coming in the pipeline, also so you can challenge them on the way they think if you know how they think. Secondly, you might end up as a product manager if later in your career you like the sound of it, or maybe from this presentation. Product managers are not born, they are made, let's say, or at least by that I mean there are no degrees, there's no master's degrees in product management as far as I know, so you have to start somewhere else and move into product management. And one of the places that you might start would be very likely the kinds of roles you're in or the kinds of subjects that you're studying, which may be interface design or usability design or engineering, computer science or software engineering, software development, even security architecture, theoretically. Entrepreneurship, so maybe if you're doing a business degree, project management, general management, or quality assurance. So you may come through one of these fields and end up as a product manager because these are all skills which are very much required by product managers to be successful, as we'll see more of in a minute. Another reason why you might be interested in product management is that if you aspire to work in one of the largest, most concentrated software companies in the world, you will find that these companies are very much in love with the concept of product management. They have plenty of product managers. They have famous product managers. They put their product managers in front of audiences like this. They write books about product management. They generally evangelize product management because it's important to how those organizations work, specifically Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, and Google, but also many others. And in most medium to larger size startups, you will find that product managers have a huge amount of influence in the organization. And you need to know these people if you care about the future of the product you're working on, because they are going to be determining that future to a large extent. And finally, and perhaps most important to me personally, and also largely how I ended up working with products myself, is that if you care about open source, if you think open source is a good thing, and you want to see more open source in the world, you want to make open source better, then you will appreciate over time that good open source requires good product management. And there aren't that many people working in the field of product management in open source. And, depending on what open source applications you're familiar with, you might have different opinions on this. But certainly, we can always do to improve the quality and the variety of open source products that we have. And that is certainly going to be helped if you have product management skills and you contribute those skills towards an open source company or product. So for those of you who have either worked with managers and disliked the experience or have just read enough Dilbert to have preconceived ideas of what managers are, you might be thinking, as an engineer, why do you need managers in the first place, right? So there may be some people who have either been or currently are self-employed, like solopreneurs or people who are working on your own side project for software, or you have a great dream, a great plan to make your own application, good for you. And you might be thinking, well, you do pretty well by yourself. You've seen plenty of other people who became managers and leaders from the engineering starting point. So why would you need any of these people who push papers around all day in the first place? Well, there's a few reasons why managers can actually be useful to you as an engineer or as a software consultant. Primarily, that creating value is hard. Has anybody experienced creating value and found it difficult? Yes, we have a founder here, also Suella, nice. Yes, creating value is difficult. Creating value, why is it difficult? Well, it's very tempting to make assumptions and not realize the assumptions that you've made until you have a city full of empty apartment buildings, like we have at the bottom here. These are cities in China which were basically erected, I think, in the early noughties. The property market changed slightly and it took years to fill these properties. It's like ghost towns. So you don't want your software product to be a ghost town. Apart from anything else, it's a very expensive way to find out that you made some wrong decisions. You can make those decisions early on. If any of you have studied entrepreneurship or business model canvas, lean startups, that's exactly what those systems are trying to avoid. Building things that people don't want, or building things that people do want, but for some reason that you never quite figure out, don't use. Getting them to pay for it is a whole other ball game. So creating value is difficult. And even if you've done your fantastic market research, you know that people want this thing, you know there's a big demand, maybe you're really lucky you're in the right place at the right time. There's no risk of you building a ghost city, but then you still have to build the city, right? And building a city can be pretty hard, depending on how complex the thing you're trying to build is. And increasingly, we use many different components in your average software product these days. So maybe you're relying on a package manager as well as all these libraries, you're relying on encryption libraries, you're relying on all sorts of different infrastructure. And the more complex it is, the more people you're likely to need, and the more people you need. For every individual person you add to your team, the communication as a whole within the team is squared, right? So you add one person, but actually the overhead in terms of communication increases exponentially, which requires management. So these guys, these managers, these much-hated species called managers, they can be useful sometimes. And even if you don't buy any of those arguments and you think managers are pretty useless, then a product manager in particular can be useful when you need to convince somebody else. Because all that complexity I was just describing, and you know, the size of the project that you want to build may well require some money, some investment. And if you want to get investment, unless you happen to be privately wealthy and have your savings, which most of us don't, then you'd need to get someone else's money. And to convince someone else to give you their money, you need to convince them that you understand the risks, that you can create value, and that would be really helpful to have a product manager on board who knows what they're doing, who has a track record of creating successful products that people want to buy, and it can be really useful. Or if you yourself have product management experience, when you're standing in front of the bank or you're standing in front of an investor of some other kind, and you can say, you know what you're talking about, you've done this before, and product management's your thing. Another reason why it might be useful to understand what product management is, or in fact become one yourself in future. And finally, if you're tempted to avoid the skills that we're going to be discussing in terms of product management, which is specific to that role, and charge straight ahead as a technical CEO, maybe you start out as the first developer, and you're following the track of Elastic or Facebook, and you're going to continue to be the leader of the whole organization from an engineering background, you should know that technical CEOs tend to suck really hard. And I can say that particularly as somebody who has been a technical CEO. I would say I probably am still a technical CEO. I'm trying to be less of a technical CEO. My staff will help me with this, I hope, going forward. But a lot of things trip you up when you come from a technical background as a CEO. And I can also attest to this as a startup mentor who has helped startups in West Africa. The biggest problems that I see in their businesses is not their idea, actually, not their execution, not their commitment, certainly, but the fact that with an engineering mindset or with a technical background, they get trapped up by these things. So culture building, human resources, more strategic planning, market segmentation, compliance with legal requirements. Things like this are not things that you're probably going to assume you'll enjoy if you come from an engineering background, but there's something that as a product manager you can build in to the development process. You can understand as part of a bigger process of the lifecycle management of the product. So yeah, maybe if you want to be this guy, then go via being a product manager first, and you'll maybe be more successful once you're in his shoes. So we've covered management. Let's quickly just get on the same page as to what a product is. So critically, a product is designed to be used, and it's not primarily for you. Product that you make is not primarily for you. Even if you're using your own product, even if you are lucky enough to be making a product, which is useful enough and generalizable enough that you can dog food it, as we say, you can eat your own dog food, you can use it on a regular basis, it's still not for you. That's like coincidental that you can use it. It's for somebody else. And you always need to remember that it's for somebody else. And it's probably, if you want to make enough money to, you know, to live on and pay other people, it's probably designed for lots of other people. And the more people it's designed for, the more variety there is among the people who it's designed for. And that means it gets even harder to meet their expectations. So we're targeting a particular market with something that's designed to be used that's not primarily for you. And there's a big gap between making something which is designed primarily for you and something that's designed primarily for other people. A very big gap. In 1975, Fred Brooks, who is a visionary in IT management, he wrote a book called The Mythical Man Month. The title relates to the idea that 1 month of one man's work is like a measurable unit of cost for making software, and he concluded that it takes 9 times as much work to take a product which is designed for you, works for me, all the way to works for everyone, or at least works for the people it's designed for. So that's 3 times the work to make what starts out as something that functions for you, integrate with the systems, operating systems, other workflows that your users are going to need, and another 3 times the work to document it, test it, and maintain it, which in total results in 9 times the amount of work to actually make a product. And that's pretty scary, because if you only allow 1 year to get your product ready, or 1 month to get your feature ready, then you're going to find that you're woefully short by quite a factor. It's 1975, right? We still haven't fully learned the lessons from them. Now, product managers appreciate this, and they do, I mean, they make sure this stuff works smoothly, and they know that they're always aiming for this, and they're never aiming for this. So a product manager doesn't care so much about this, he cares entirely about this, because this is how their success is judged as a product manager. Not whether it works on GitHub, not where it works on a demo, not even if it works in a presentation, but if it actually works for the users, for the people who it's designed for, and work reliably. So a product manager is not exclusively any one of these things. It's not a chief executive, it's not an engineer, it's not a product manager, sorry, project manager, although you might be confused, but it is separate to being a project manager. It's not a business developer, it's not a user experience engineer, it's not a UI designer, it's not an account manager. Not exclusively, but it does involve elements of these roles, which makes it very difficult. It is fundamentally somebody who intersects the skills from these three areas: an awareness of the technology and the feasibility. You could also think about that in terms of operations. That's like the factory, that's how you make the thing. User experience, so that's representing the users, if they get what they expect and what they need, and the business, so that this thing is actually sustainable, that you can actually afford to pay to make the technology and to do the research with the users to make sure that it does what it's supposed to do. So a product manager sits in the middle, and they need to understand these groups. And you can think about these three groups as being like stakeholders, right? So they manage the concerns and the needs of these three groups of stakeholders. That means that they have to take what I would call a holistic or an integrative approach. They have to integrate these different needs together. They have to always carry around an understanding of these multiple different competing requirements at one time. And they have to be constantly balancing and negotiating between the different people in these groups and the different challenges that they face, because there are fundamental conflicts between these three areas. Like, you know, the users want the moon constantly. They want things that they'll never even use because they don't know whether they'll use it until they have it. They want it to be perfect. They want it yesterday. They want it to be free. Business doesn't care what the users want, they just want it to be profitable. And, you know, the engineers are just like, that's not feasible, that won't take long enough, or even worse than that, that'll be fine, that'll be done on time, and then it's never done on time, and then everything else collapses. So the product manager is the one person who has to be based in reality so that they know what other people are saying is actually going to fit together, and on release day, whether it's going to do what it's supposed to do. It's also not finished, a product manager's role, at the time that the software is released. It's a continuous relationship they have. It's the life cycle of the product needs to be managed from beginning to end, and often as soon as it gets to the end, it feeds back into the beginning and you continue to improve and improve based on the feedback. So if you want a more detailed perspective of a product manager's key skills, this is from McKinsey & Company. McKinsey is a consulting company who likes to train enterprises on how to improve the skills of their own product managers. They break down the key capabilities that product managers need to have into five, specifically organization and governance, which is start with talent management. Talent management, which is more like the human resources aspect of the role. Organization and governance, which is putting in structure, sort of more general management. Portfolio optimization and prioritization, so this is also from a commercial perspective, like the market segmentation we talked about. Product planning and review process. This is also quality assurance, quality testing, these kinds of aspects. And then tools and infrastructure, which is again more of the operations side. So this is a lot of experience, a lot of understanding that people expect these guys to have. Frankly, unfair. But depending on which organization they're in, obviously product managers will lean more in one direction or the other. And depending on whether it's more of a marketing-led organization or more of an engineering-led organization, there'll be more pressure and more expectations or one or other of these areas of skills. As I mentioned, there is naturally a degree of tension. Hopefully it's healthy tension as the product manager sits in meetings and balances the concerns of the different groups in the organization. That means they need to be great communicators. It really helps if you have some emotional intelligence. It's another thing that McKinsey prioritizes in particular. Keeping people happy and making them take one for the team from time to time is a necessary skill and also very difficult. Obviously the people that you're working with are going to be passionate, and obviously they're going to be fighting for what their role is. And that's a key part of what being a product manager is. Also, product managers, although they have this responsibility, as I've described, they don't necessarily have corresponding power to execute that responsibility. As I said, they're not the chief executive necessarily, so that means they have to make people play nice, but they don't necessarily have the tools in order to enforce that or make it work. And how do you fill that gap? The influence gap, let's say, like you're responsible for something, but you're not able to just put down the executive authority to fix it. Well, you have to manage the stress that you experience in that role, because it is a stressful position to be in. And also, you need to use your influence and communication skills to achieve what you need to do, which, again, is hard. So what does a product manager do on a day-to-day basis? Well, according to Product School, about 40% of the time is spent communicating, about 20% of the time is spent on the market research and business development side of the role. And I'm now, I've been rushing through these a bit so that we have time to get to the open source tools that maybe you more at the front of the room who are not students are more interested in than those at the back because you have, you're starting your careers. But let's look at some of the typical functions of a product manager in terms of practical day-to-day work they need to do. So user research, user story writing, sprint and backlog management is critically important. This is about the operational side of the creation of the product. Acceptance testing, so making sure that the product has been created is actually what you expect it to be and met by, you know, meets the expectations of those that it's designed for. Data warehousing, if you're not familiar with that term, it's basically combining lots of different sources of data into a single place so that you can get insights from that data. So maybe you have a lot of analytics, maybe you have telemetry from the app that's built in telling you what people use most, what buttons they click most, or so on. And at some point, it pays to put all that information together in order to be able to make concrete decisions based upon it. And finally, workflow mapping. So actually, before you create a new feature or even a new product, to understand how the user's going to use it from the first step to the last step. And if you don't do that, then often you find lots of nasty surprises as you get to the end. Now, there are actually no shortage of open source applications for doing these kinds of things. The issue is not, from my perspective, the number of applications, but more the quality of the applications and how widely used and how well supported they are. So we have a list here of various options, but I'll skip to what we at PHP List are currently using on the next page. Maybe I'll just give you a second to read through this before I move ahead. Okay. So PHP List for user research, we've used Lime Survey. It's a pretty flexible survey tool. We send out surveys automatically. So at certain points, surveys are triggered and they're sent out to request feedback on what people liked, disliked about the product, what they liked about the last release, what they want to see in the next release, etc. Again, all of these are open source, of course. For data warehousing, we use Pyrrhic. Pyrrhic is actually a very flexible tool. You can set goals and triggers for all kinds of things. You can set goals and triggers both within a product, so in terms of how people are using it, how many people are using the new feature that you made, but you can also use goals and triggers purely for the commercial side, so conversions, inquiries, and put those together in order to have a better understanding of what changes you're making are driving in the user behavior. User story writing, we use Gherkin extensively combined with Behat. So Gherkin is a very simple language for writing user stories, basically, so something that you can share with users to explain what the application is going to be doing. And then we use Travis to execute the many tests that we have in combination with WebDriver Selenium and so on. For workflow mapping, I tend to use LibreOffice Draw. It's not a perfect tool. There are a couple of others that I've listed here, actually just Pencil, but there are one or two others. It works well enough for me. The workflow mapping system is quite nice. I'm very proud of the PDFs that I produce, and I show them as much as I can. And sprint and backlog management, we use Mantis and Custom Spreadsheet currently. There are many others, including Tiger, which has got quite a lot of... it's got many different aspects of agile management built in, including burndown charts and trajectory mapping, things like that. WeCan is a simpler option, which specifically is just for card-based issue management, if you want something that's lighter. Mantis is an older tool that we use, but we've customized it pretty heavily over about 15 years of use. And what I like about it is that we can extend it and very cheaply get features added when we need to. So that's pretty much it for the content of my talk. I have some further reading here if you're interested. There are a variety of conferences, events, nice YouTube videos that you can check out. If you're going to look for a community, the open source design community has several nice topics listing interesting tools, interview techniques, ways for understanding the user needs, that part of open source application development. If you want to see more what's going on inside those big Silicon Valley companies, then the book by Marty Kagan on product management is very nice. It's well written, pretty concise. And if you want to develop your skills in that direction, then Scrum Product Owner is the closest thing that I can find. There is no qualification that I'm aware of that has any kind of international backing or credibility specifically for product management. The closest is product ownership from my perspective. And yeah, that's it for me. Thank you for your attention. Questions?
Thank you for your presentation. In general, so a company with open software, how does the company manage to make profit? Because suppose I'm a product manager, I want to convince my boss to develop something which is open, but I'm asking someone to work for free, basically. In general, how do companies that develop something which is open manage later to make a profit out of it? Because I have a company, I have to pay my employees.
So that's an excellent question, one which I've spoken about before. There is actually a talk at this conference about open source business models, which might be helpful to you. We also have another, coming up next. Is that yours? Excellent, so stay put. And I was actually going to refer him to you anyway as a founder, so that's good. I'll leave it there, if that's okay. Any other questions?
So how do you know somebody's going to be a good product manager before you make them a project manager?
Good question, hard question. I'm just thinking about it for a second. I can't claim to be an expert on that question because I haven't been through the process and I'm at a point where I can look back and say that was right, that was wrong. But my opinion would be someone who knows enough of the reality, sort of because they've worked in the trenches long enough to know the challenges, so they can empathize with enough of these people that they can really convince them. There's nothing like being able to walk the walk rather than talk the talk. If you want to get buy-in from these different stakeholders that you have, I think it's pretty critical that, yeah, they've got the depth of knowledge in those fields. And, compassion. Compassion is very important when you're trying to convince engineers to let go of quality or scope on time is the best answer I can offer. Any other questions?
So, as you mentioned, that emotional intelligence is very critical attribute of a project manager, and influencing people and listening, especially if there is an open culture and it's an open source company, we need to listen to everybody, no matter at what level the associate is or the engineer is, listening to their ideas. So how there can be clashes at some point of time. So how do effectively resolve those clashes and getting through the project without breaking the deadlines and everything? So how do you think, how effectively a project manager can do that?
I'm going to refer this to my expert here in the audience, Suella, who's a product owner at PHP List.
We at PHP List have had quite a flexible approach on this kind of clashes, trying to meet requirements or requests from our forum users and also meet the needs and serve to our clients who pay for the product. So what we don't compromise with, it's the quality. So if we feel threatened or we feel that it might affect somehow the quality of the product, then makes our choice easier. But then if it's a particular feature or something else that we are not certain if it will benefit 20% or 50% of our users, then we try to be more flexible and try to put it on or include it on a release that basically without affecting the outcome of the sprint. We try to stay pretty religious with our deadlines, because we feel that our team is more motivated when the deadlines are met. We try to not compromise with the quality than with the deadline, and we try to be flexible with what we thought we will include in the release.
Do we have any more questions? I'd really like a question from one of the students at the back. I'm going to walk and approach you with a microphone. While I'm saying this, I'm going to say we have jobs. We have a PHP job, anybody who is looking for a PHP opportunity. But somebody here, I need a question. I'm going to block the exit. No one's leaving until we have a question from the students at the back.
Wait, can I enter?
Oh, Oh, you weren't here. Well, I can't ask you. That's not fair. Okay. I'm going to demand a question.
Oh, yes, you're doing 5 minutes left. But you were listening to the talk. This is why I've got to ask you to find out if they're listening, right? Do we have any students who are listening to the talk?
Come on, guys. Come on. One question. That's all I'm asking. I was very clear. Who said I was very clear?
Yeah, you want to repeat it?
No, I want you to ask.
Right, so I mean, for the arts, for us as students, would you offer any suggestion, maybe be like kind of an opportunity related to PhD list?
Specifically to
architecture?
Yeah. At the moment, we're just looking specifically at PhD developers. No, other than that, no, not right now. But if you contribute to a reference on the project, we would love to have you on board. We have sprints here.
Maybe just transform the question a little bit. If you're a student, what's the one thing you can it's hard to focus on emotional intent. You know, you either have it or you don't. But if you're a student, you want to become a product manager, what's the one thing you should focus on?
Thanks. I think emotional intelligence can probably be developed, but I don't know. I'm not an expert. One thing that you should develop as a student if you want to move in the direction of being a product manager. It's really about perspective. So it's easy to stay myopic on like having very narrow focus on the one responsibility you have in an organization, especially if there's a lot of pressure on you to deliver only in that one dimension. But as time goes past, your colleagues and your managers will absolutely appreciate if they sense that you have an understanding of the broader picture and how the work that you're doing fits into the product. Because ultimately, as somebody who's working in a software company, you're almost certainly going to be working on a product. And that product is more than just one, it's more than the sum of its parts. It's got a life of its own, an entity of its own. And read around your subject, I guess. There's lots of great materials. Try and empathize with your colleagues and talk to them about the challenges that they have. Invite your business developer or your even your manager for a coffee or for a meal sometime and just chat. That's a really good way to build compassion and understanding of the challenges that they face and broaden your understanding of, like, the product. Thank you.
How about volunteering to be a product manager on an open source project?
Ooh, that's hard. Absolutely. So there are open source projects. Let's see, LibreOffice is a good example of an organization that has a variety of different roles and yet remains, as in they have a variety of different professional roles within the organization, but they remain an NGO, a registered, it's not a charity, but they have a special legal status in Germany. So there are organizations in which you could opt volunteer to be a product manager. It's something I think would be difficult to do one day a week. Absolutely. And like I said earlier, open source needs more product management mindset and skills in order to improve the quality of the software that we produce. So that's it. Thank you.